From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 171 with guest Isaac Roybal, recorded Thursday, August 22nd, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. And with me, as always, or at least almost every time, it has been lately
almost
anyway.
Always.
Yeah. Let's go with always. Greg Hughes.
Always.
Always.
What's up? How's it going?
I've been looking at Kinex. Do you know what I'm talking about, Kinex?
Yeah, that Xbox 360 thingamajig.
Yeah, the code name was Natal.
Yeah, and by the way, the new Xbox just looks cool.
It does look very cool. So,
and I love that it has wireless built in.
Yeah, they and it obviously runs cooler. They got rid of the red ring of death. I think it's a green ring now.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still a ring of death.
There's still a ring somewhere. And it's a USB device, yeah. Right? So get this, my security friend. Tell me this is not a great idea. I plug one of these things into my workstation, sitting on top of my monitor, and now I can have a group policy that says, when I have sensitive data up in the screen, if another face appears in the view of the monitor, shut the screen down or black that window out.
Really?
Well, why not? Because I now can actually, the whole thing with that device is it'll do facial recognition. It can tell who's looking at the screen. So on one hand, it's just the identification possibilities. But I love the idea of only you can be looking at this screen.
Oh, I see what you mean. All right. So take that device and plug it into your computer as opposed to the
and
Xbox.
Start thinking about it in terms of a device for extending the use of the machine. And the weird, you know, so now you're getting a gesture-based computing. Okay, I can flip pages by waving my hand at the screen and so forth. Maybe I could now have a touch screen where I don't have to actually smudge it up. I like that. But the one that sort of I thought was interesting was using it as part of using the facial recognition as part of security, but also being able to do those group policies over, if I don't recognize everybody that's looking at the screen, I can't show you this window.
Well, as long as it works.
As long as it works. See, now you're just being difficult. I'm just trying to make a product here. Who cares if it works?
Something like that.
There you go.
You know, it's a... The Microsoft has a way of dreaming things up and doing some pretty incredible stuff, and so do a lot of other companies. But it's when those companies have to actually work together, that's when it gets complicated, right?
Funny you would bring that up. That's pretty much an exact description of today's show. I almost think you set that up. I'm just hoping, and this is totally a sideline to us getting into our main conversation here, that people are thinking about using Kinex on something other than an Xbox, because I just think the possibilities there are huge.
Yeah, that might be kind of interesting. You know, that would be kind of a cool – that'd be a cool, like, you know, like specialty niche website to set up, right? Website to set up so I can pronounce it right. But, you know, is like, you know, using Kinex for something other than what it was intended for. That's probably not a good name, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, thinking of beyond, but I could see taking the features that are in Kinex and building them into a monitor. So that now every monitor has a video camera, but it also, you know, it has that facial recognition component and the depth perception 3D thing and microphones. Like it's the new generation UI. My crazy hardware chops are showing.
Well, you know, some things never change.
There you go. I'm always a geek. I have a...
Speaking of which...
Bringing back a popular guest of ours, Isaac Roybal. Hi, Isaac.
How's it going?
Hey, Isaac.
Good, sir. So, we talked to you about IIS. We talked to you about virtualization. But now you're not even with Microsoft anymore.
No, I recently left Microsoft and came over to Cisco Systems.
Interesting. Why would you do that?
Well, you know, it's there's a great opportunity at Cisco in what they're doing with their unified computing system platform, and I thought it was very intriguing in what they were doing. It's very different than what most server vendors are doing out there today, and I really wanted to go and explore this opportunity a little bit more. However, I did not abandon my Microsoft roots. I'm actually looking after Microsoft as an ISV on top of the UCS platform.
Interesting.
So the things that I've spoken to you about in the past, the previous shows that we've done, I'm actually looking at getting those implemented on top of UCS and having, you know, first class solutions on top of UCS that are Microsoft related.
So describe what we're talking about here. UCS, you know, what is that? How does Microsoft relate to it today? And what are you looking for the future?
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. So UCS, you know, which is, like I mentioned earlier, stands for Unified Computing System, is something new for Cisco. So about a little over a year ago, Cisco actually made some ripples in the industry by announcing they were you know, dipping their toes kind of in the server realm and server waters. So what they did is they actually built a very clever system, which is it really combines the networking strengths that they have with some of the hardware that's out there today. So when you break down UCS, some people want to think about it as just another server. But they've done a couple of clever things that I'll describe here in a moment. But really, when you look at UCS, it's broken down into two distinct pieces. There's the B series, which are blade servers, and then there's the C series, which are straight rack mount servers that we're used to seeing, you know, over the last 15, 20 years. And so they've done some pretty clever things by bringing the networking components into the server aspect of that. One of the most clever pieces in my mind that they've been doing, there's really five key things, but to me, one of the greatest things with my IT background kind of saying, hey, I wish I had this 10 years ago, is what's called hardware abstraction. And when you think about UCS, essentially, let's talk about the B series for a second. When you have the B series, you have many blade servers that are in a chassis, just like traditional blade servers that anyone puts out there today. However, as you're well aware, you have the physical hardware, you have an OS tied to that hardware, and then you have the application tied to that OS, right? So if some disaster happens and that blade fails, well, then you have to go and provision a new blade, stick the operating system on top of there, the application, etc. Well, what Cisco's done is they've actually done a hardware abstraction technology within UCS. And what they call it is a service profile. So think about all the blade servers that you have within a certain chassis. Those are just blank pieces of tin, right? They're just blank servers. And what we're able to do is actually take everything that makes a server, the MAC address, the BIOS settings, the firmware version, the HBA configurations, you name it. We're able to abstract that up into a logical entity and wrap that in what's called a service profile. So let's take the example that, you know, this server fails. Well, instead of having to reprovision an entirely new server, we can take every single attribute and identity component from that failed server and move it over to a new blank server and apply it, reboot, and we're back up and running as if we never failed. So essentially, we cut the downtime, you know, from hours to essentially just a reboot cycle.
Sounds very VMware did something like this with Sphere, where they're basically maintaining images of their virtualized machines on other hardware, so you could switch over to them on demand.
That's actually a good analogy, except we're doing that at the hardware level. So we're saying if your host machine completely dies, we're able to move your entire hardware profile over to a new machine. Your virtual instances or the virtual layer will stay, you know, relatively the same. But what happens when you have a catastrophic failure that the hardware fails?
Right.
We're able to pull all those entities over and move them over quickly.
Now, if the hardware's failed, you can't pull them over because the hardware's failed, right? You have to have a backup somewhere.
Yeah, you would have to have another, like I said, another blank kind of blade sitting within that chassis or within another chassis within a UCS domain.
Now, I'm more concerned about the data that was running on the machine that failed. How do we protect that?
Yeah, that's a great point. So essentially, this is a great case for boot from SAN. So essentially, like I mentioned, we can keep all the HBA configurations. So if your, let's say, blade A fails, blade B is blank and sitting there waiting for something to be thrown onto it. You're booting from SAN. You have everything stored on your SAN. Well, since that HBA configuration is stored within that service profile, when we move it from A to B and B reboots, it will automatically point to the SAN in the back end and all your data is still there. So you're not really dealing with any of the onboard drives. You're dealing with all your data that's stored in the back end.
Yeah, as far as your SAN is concerned, it's the same HBA.
Correct. Right? Your SAN doesn't know any better. It's just saying, yep, here's my vSAN network that I'm going to go and access this data off of it. It looks exactly the same.
Gotcha. Interesting.
This sounds very cloud-like as well, right? I mean, this almost sounds like the cloud in your own data center.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a great point. That's one of the, you know, the hot topics, obviously, in the industry today is talking about private cloud and these cloud type of entities. And when you start, attaching a lot of these other components on there, like virtualization and some of these self-provisioning portals, you're still tied to the physical hardware. And if you have a volatile underlining hardware layer that is prone to failure, you can, you know, your private cloud comes tumbling down, right? So that's where we feel that UCS provides a great differentiated value amongst other hardware platforms out there, is that we take that risk out of the hardware platform as well. So you can also have this service profile that can roam around your data center and then be able to be applied at will. Another interesting scenario that we kind of look at it's kind of theoretical at the moment, but we certainly see this as something customers will implement over time, is you talk about kind of follow the sun type of scenarios or even workload driven type of scenarios. So let's say, for example, you have a UCS domain that consists of five chassis. And you know, within each chassis, you can have up to eight blades. So let's say within those five chassis and eight blades in each one, you're running a call center. You're a data center administrator for a call center. And you have, everybody that's on the call center floor from 8 to 5. Well, during that 8 to 5 time frame, you're serving up, say, VDI. You're sending all the desktop images down to these call center folks so they can do their job from 8 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once they lock up and close up shop at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, well, then what happens to that hardware? Typically, it would just sit there idle because no one's using that VDI workload. Well, with the service profiles, what the data center administrator can actually do is after 5 o'clock, he can actually move those service profiles and save state and just store them off to the side, and then apply a whole different set of service profiles, say, for example, for SQL data warehousing. And he can apply those service profiles to use that hardware from, say, 5 in the evening till 8 in the morning until those call center folks come back into the office. And then he just reapplies the VDI images from there, the service profiles, and he's back up and running. So you can actually use the same hardware for two different workloads, even at different times of the day.
Yeah, I set up stuff like this with the old Unisys 32-way machines, where we'd have an Exchange workload and an OLAP workload. And, you know, during the day, Exchange got the bulk of the cores, and OLAP, because it wasn't doing any processing, was just serving up results, got a few cores. And then at night, when you're doing the OLAP processing, you'd cut the Exchange way back and give the cores over to the OLAP services.
Yeah, that's very similar of what UCS can do, except for instead of just cutting back the number of cores, you can dedicate the entire system to that workload and then flip-flop between both workloads without losing any data or identity resources whatsoever through that service profile. So for me, that's one of my favorites that I see, you know, especially in a lab environment, when you think about some of these lab personnel that have to reapply images and rebuild images over and over again. It can be quite a headache without a service profile. But with the service profile, like I mentioned, we can go all the way down even to the firmware version or even the BIOS version to apply on a specific machine.
So where does Microsoft fit into the equation here?
Yeah, so with Microsoft, we certainly have taken some first steps. So as I mentioned, UCS has only been out in the market a little over a year. And we've been working with Microsoft from day one. And today we're a Microsoft certified OEM. So we OEM Windows Server operating systems on top of our UCS platform. So that's our first step that we're going out there. So we've been logoed on Windows Server 2003, Windows Server 2008, as well as 2008 R2. So we're certainly working with Microsoft on various fronts, not only with the operating system, but when you talk about just IT in general, the next thing that comes into mind is management, right? So that's great. I have a new hardware platform. I got the OSs on top of there. How do I manage that? So since I've come over to Cisco, one of my top priorities has been system center integration.
Right.
And one of the key things that we're doing, we have a management pack that we've already built for UCS to write into Operations Manager. They can surface up our information. So that's one key thing that we're driving right now, and we're coming out with a V2 around the August-September timeframe of this year. So we're moving extremely fast to get those resources out there for system center shops to start engaging with UCS. The second piece that I'm actually working on as we speak is a PowerShell provider and a set of commandlets that Cisco will be shipping. So we're hoping to ship that here at the end of this month, which is July or August timeframe at the beginning of August. And we're looking, things are looking really good. So we essentially want to build a PowerShell provider that folks who are comfortable with PowerShell or currently leveraging PowerShell can write some commandlets on their own or utilize our own commandlets from there. And then we're also working on a VMM integration as well, so Virtual Machine Manager. Our Pro Packs, or excuse me, our management packs today are Pro enabled, and we're going to be writing some Pro Packs with Pro Tips as well from a virtualization perspective. So we're identifying some of those scenarios and what would be that low hanging fruit, if you will, that we can actually get put into a Pro Tip and go from there. And then we're looking at some more complex integration pieces with System Center, with Config Manager. We're looking at doing an OEM deployment pack and some other things from there, as well as integrating with the recently acquired Opalis runbook automation suite that Microsoft purchased about a year ago now. So we certainly have our plate full just on the management side, and we're certainly driving towards that from a Microsoft perspective.
So, I mean, some of the tricks you're describing and so forth, this is what SCVMM was all about, right? Was, you know, I've got this set up in my own rack where I can point at a given virtual machine instance and say, go put this on another host. And, you know, where buzz click, it's on another host. The users generally can't even tell it happened.
Oh, yeah, you're correct. With intelligent placement and live migration through SCVMM, you're absolutely right. And again, we want to be able to enhance that virtualization layer even further. So we don't want to take away from the value of virtualization and say that, hey, we can do this at the hardware level. What we're really saying is what virtualization does for you today is great, but we want to give you a greater sense of security at the hardware level by being able to have a fully redundant hardware platform as well. So, you know, if you kind of look at this from a worst case scenario that, you know, your entire cluster goes down and there's no physical machines available to move those VMs over.
Right.
And you don't want obviously the last node standing to be able to, take on all that weight and collapse. You can then spin up new hosts on the fly and be able to manage that situation. So we really see this as a complement to virtualization and not a replacement in any way. And matter of fact, from when you look at it from a virtualization perspective, we look at UCS as one of the premier virtualization platforms out there with some of the work we're doing from our converged network adapter technology that we have. And we also have our virtual interface card, which is, codenamed the M81KR, which sounds like a very, very cool name. but with that, what we're doing with that is, speaking from a virtualization perspective, is this is actually one single adapter that you can plug into these B series, and we're moving this also to our C series, our rack-mounted servers. And what it does is it can actually virtualize up to 128 VNICs. So you can actually, with one single adapter, you can present either to the OS or to the virtualization layer up to 128 virtual network adapters. And that can be either Ethernet or fiber channel VNICs, however you decide to split those up. And so when you really look at that from a virtualization perspective, we want to allow even greater flexibility at that virtualization layer. We see great value in that, and we don't want to take away. We want to really enhance that.
So, I mean, it really sounds to me like you're building hardware designed for virtualization.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a good way to look at it. When when we started coming out in the market and developing this particular platform, virtualization was still one of the hottest topics out there as it is today. So we really said we don't want to fight that momentum in any way. We see the hardware as something that should be complementing the virtualization layer instead of saying, well, you know, hey, I have virtualization now, so my hardware level is just something that's just a throwaway component that I can, you know, if a server dies, I can just throw it away. We really look at it that if you invest in top-notch hardware that is designed for virtualization, that's just going to enhance your virtualization deployment even more.
Yeah, although, I mean, it runs on other hardware anyway. It just seems like you're sort of completing the end-to-end stack on this. The few cool tricks that sort of jumped out to me was this ability to fake out a SAN, that you're sharing LBAs in some way.
Yeah, exactly, right? We kind of looked at it from, you know, the IT pro who's actually in the data center and having to kind of rack up these servers and stack them up and cable them and get them configured and put the OS. I mean, that was just a lengthy, cumbersome process to do over and over again, especially as data centers grew. And we really just said, how do we help these guys do rapid deployment of the initial provisioning? And then once the workload is deployed, whether physical or virtual, how do we help them mitigate risk with failure between these two, such as the SAN fake out that you just mentioned? You know, really, it's just a set of resources and a set of targets that you look at. And as long as those targets don't move, then you have continuity between the two hardware resources if one fails.
And is there another layer of software going on here besides Microsoft's Hyper-V, or I presume I can do this with ESX as well? Is there Cisco's own virtualization layer as well, or is it even required? Can I do this without ESX or Hyper-V?
Oh, you mean the service profiles?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So essentially what we're doing is we have something called our UCS manager. And what that does is it's a consolidated management platform that we've built from the ground up. So it's not a virtualization layer in any way. What it is essentially meant to manage our hardware from the ground up. Then you would add your virtualization layer and then your OS and applications and whatever you'd want to put on top of there. So with our UCS manager, UCSM for short, essentially what it is just it's an XML-based embedded management suite that's within our switches that manage the UCS manager. And what that does is that actually stores all the information about all the blades, all the chassis, all the health state, faults, any kind of alerts, and surfaces that up. What it also does is it allows us to create pools of resources. So we call them resource pools. And for example, if you want to do rapid provisioning of several service profiles and just have them sitting off to the side and not associated with any physical hardware today, what we're able to do is create a MAC pool, for example. So you have, you know, 100 MAC addresses that are sitting there. And as you create new service profiles, it just pools from that pool of resources. It'll just pull the next MAC and apply it to whatever service profile you want. So that's essentially how we're managing everything from that perspective. UCS Manager is the single point for us to manage all of our resources underneath. And as I mentioned, the PowerShell provider earlier in the show, what we're doing now is we're actually writing that PowerShell provider to interface with this XML. So essentially, we're writing on top of an XML API that UCS Manager surfaces up. So that's how we're managing everything from end to end.
So now I'm wondering why I would need, if I already have the hardware portability from the UCS Manager, why would I put Hyper-V in the mix as well?
Yeah, that's actually a great point, right? And really, when you look at it, it's about consolidation ratios, right? So if you, because again, if you think about the service profile, that's really for fault tolerance or or kind of redundancy purposes if you do have catastrophic failures.
Right.
However, we're not able to put several OSs on one physical box without a hypervisor.
Right.
Right. So essentially, we're just managing the physical tin of the server itself, and then we're abstracting that identity up into this logical profile that I can put on any other, you know, blank pieces of tin, if you will, within the UCS manager. However, when you still want to do some consolidation or any other you know value of virtualization like VDI, for example, you still need a virtualization layer to do that.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I got to challenge you on this point you made about having blades sitting there empty. I got to think if I've got any hardware in my racks, I'm using it. So I just got to think, is there ways? This is where I guess my job as an IT pro working with this PowerShell piece would come in, is that I would spin up as many instances as I could of, say, a website. But if I lose some gear and I need some resources, I could actually shut some of those down and then take them over for other workloads.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take the example that you have, you know, 8 blades within one chassis, mm-hmm. right? And you have these 8 blades sitting there, and 4 of them are running this web server, this web application, this web tier of your application, right? And let's say number 1 goes down, and let me phrase this up a little bit better. So if you have 4 that are serving up the application itself, and then you have 4 that are serving the data tier, for example. Now, let's say you have one of those data tier blades is just kind of idly kind of going by, and you say, you know what, I can do fine with 3 of them if I need to. Well, let's say one of your web servers goes down and you're just, you know, the other 3 are just getting hammered. Well, again, with the service profile, what you can do of that app blade is you can actually save the state of that app blade, and then you can apply the web workload blade, the web workload on top of that blade, and you're ready to go. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, you can load balance the workload of your hardware as well to say, well, hey, I have 4 app tier blades managing this application today, but I can go by with 3, no problem. And whenever disaster strikes on, say, your web tier, you can just pull that back down into the app tier and then repurpose or kind of commandeer one of those blades to act as your web tier now.
Are we really dealing with that much hardware failure these days? I just find my gear is insanely reliable. Like, quality hardware, it just doesn't die much anymore. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you don't have the fire drills back in, you know, like 98, 99, where, oh my God, the internet is down,
yeah.
right? And kind of running around that way. And, you know, that's actually a great point. We certainly build our hardware, you know, with the highest quality products and components out there. So what we really look at it is the worst case. Most IT shops always design for the worst case scenario,
right?
Because you look at those folks in the data center, their job is keeping those servers up and running. And I wouldn't really say the servers, but it's the service up and running, right? And so when their job hangs in the balance, they always think about what's the worst case scenario, and I have to design for that.
Yeah.
And that's how we look at UCS as well with these service profiles. We say, you know what, we feel confident that our servers are going to be up and running for you, you know, with the highest quality possible. But what if that one instance happens, you have this to actually, you know, kind of pull back and save you from that. And again, if you kind of look at other scenarios out there, such as like a lab environment where you are doing reprovisioning, you know, several times a day, this is where this also helps you out as well. So we see it as a couple of different angles there.
Yeah.
So from a business aspect, from the standpoint of looking at it as a business guy, if I have to pay for this stuff, what? Give me a gut check here. You know, if I'm out buying, you know, Dell or HP servers normally and stacking them up in racks and doing some virtualization and sort of doing what everybody does. What's the difference between that scenario, kind of that classic scenario today, and going with, you know, this new Cisco capability and new hardware? Is there a big difference in price? Is it pretty similar, or what's the story?
That's a great question. And actually, when you look at it, when you go out and provision new servers, there was a stat out there that we heard it. Whenever someone goes and deploys a new server or even they just kind of did an audit of their data center, 25% of their total cost come from cabling alone, right? So that's a huge cost that comes in. The other big factor when you look at servers is the memory cost, right? So really, I need to stuff a bunch of RAM in these machines, and that's what really makes the price go up on servers over the long term. So from a Cisco perspective, we actually wanted to tackle those two pieces as well. So again, we wanted to look at it from end to end, you know, really that IT guy who's stacking, you know, those servers up within the data center. We created something called Unified Fabric, which what that means is essentially we have a couple of Nexus 5000 switches that sit within a rack, within a UCS domain, and which consist of up to 320 blades, right?
Only.
So 320 blades in an entire UCS domain.
Yeah, that's just a mere 320 blades. And each one of those blades is what? It could be a quad core?
So each one of we have three different models. We have a B200, which is a dual core machine, and then we have which is a half width blade, and then we have a B250, which is a full width blade, which is also a dual core. And then it has something called extended memory technology, which I'll talk about here in a second. And then we have our 460s, which is a four socket machine, which is a full width blade as well.
And four sockets being two cores per socket?
Well, actually, we're working with the Westmere EX right now. So we just deployed our M2 blades, which actually can go up to six cores per socket.
That's, 1,800-something, 1,900 cores in a rack. That's a lot of...
That's a lot of cores.
That's a lot of heat. That's what that is.
Well, actually, that's interesting you bring that up, even from a heat perspective. I'm telling you, these engineers who designed this system were extremely clever the way they thought about everything. Heat was one of the biggest things as well. So when you look within a UCS chassis, everything is parallel to one another. So you have maximum airflow that moves in and out of that server. So there's nothing that's actually impeding the airflow and keeping heat kind of coiled up and sitting within the machine itself, right? Now, heat is a very interesting topic when going back to cabling. When you think about airflow, usually the cool air is being sucked in through the front of the server and being pushed out of the back of the server, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what is the biggest bulk of mass that's sitting behind the server?
The cable
bundles, behind a rack.
Yeah.
Is that cabling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you get some heat that's just sitting back there because the cables are impeding that airflow. Well, going back to this unified fabric of what we've done is we're able to use fiber channel over Ethernet with those Nexus 5000s at the top of the switch. So what would typically take you three different cables, for example, fiber channel, then you might have something for your local area network, then your vSAN, and then some sort of management network behind there. You're talking about four cables per server. And then you figure out, you know, hey, I have a 42U rack. You kind of multiply that up. That's a ton of cables that are just sitting in there.
Yep.
Well, what we've been able to do is consolidate all of that traffic over one single Ethernet cable, over fiber channel over Ethernet. So what we're able to do is plug one cable into the top of our switch here, which is our Nexus 5000, which is running the UCS manager. And with one cable, we're able to bring that down into one chassis, and which would have what are called fabric extenders. And we're able to take that one Ethernet cable and plug that in. So you get not only management, but you get all of your VLANs, any kind of management network on top of there. So we are able to consolidate all that into one single cable. And then you can also, for redundancy purposes, you can run a second cable for redundancy. So in case, obviously, one goes down, then you can plug that into another Nexus 5000 switch so you have load balancing and redundancy between the two. So with that unified fabric, we're able to cut the complexity of the cabling system in nearly in half, but we're still able to give you the throughput and the IOPS that you need because it's running 10 gig Ethernet in the back end.
Isaac, I think we're just about out of time here. Anything people need to know about where to go, what to see, how it would work with their existing infrastructure?
Yeah, feel free to go to cisco.com/go/UCS where you can get all the information you need on UCS and some of the cool stuff we're doing from, like I mentioned, the hardware abstraction, as well as unified fabric, as well as another cool feature called extended memory technology. So we're essentially able to give you 2 to 4 times more VMs per blade with this particular technology. So it allows you to get up to about 384 gigs of RAM per blade, which is you know, a pretty beefy machine when
it's
you talk
lots.
About those. Yep, talk about those 6-core machines and all that RAM. So you can certainly get the muscle you need, and you get the fault tolerance you need as well, and the management and portability you need as well.
Yeah, 384 gigs. That's 64 gigs per core on a 6-core.
That's yep. That's it.
Only.
So talk about you know, VDI and some of these other workloads. We certainly have the RAM capability and the virtualization aspects of it to handle some of these workloads efficiently.
Azure Roybal, sounds like you got a cool new job.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. so I'm excited to go out and evangelize this a little bit and hopefully get some folks to see the great value that we're bringing to the market.
Well, thanks for coming to talk to us.
Well, thanks for having me again, guys. It's always
great to talk to you again, Isaac.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.